last year, and not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. 464-8295, but please do not call unless we ask for a call, because right now we have on our, with us online, our good friend Craig Roberts, who was over in Vietnam. He retired as a lieutenant colonel from the military reserve, worked for many years as a police officer, and had written a couple of great books we carry, including specifically The Medusa File and A Sniper Looks at Dealey Plaza. And we have a number of great four-tape sets with him as we've explored various things he's been interested in. I asked Craig to come on and talk about what's going on as he sees the story unfolding in the Middle East, and then other things that he is concerned about. Craig, thanks so much for being with us.
Always glad to be back, Dr. Stan.
Well, why don't you pick up, and I'll just be quiet. You talk for a while.
I know you got me on here to get some relief, didn't you?
Right.
Well, I'm always glad to be back, Dr. Stan. And you know, there's so many things going on now. It's like... one of the radio show talk hosts used to talk about a long time ago. He called it the quickening, where everything starts happening faster and faster, and it just seems to be out of control. And the interesting thing is we've got these politicians in Washington who are supposed to be doing things for us that are absolutely silent on very, very obvious things that are going on around this country that are dangerous. You know, we had 9/11, and after that they started this giant bureaucracy known as Homeland Security. They passed all of these new laws that have to do with anti-terrorism. They sent all of our troops overseas to, you know, various countries, Afghanistan, Iraq, and so on. And yet they turn right around and they leave the homeland totally vulnerable. And, you know, such things as Homeland Security. If you go to the Transportation Security Agency, checkpoints at the airports, we find them checking people who obviously aren't terrorists, and they're allowing people who would fit that profile to walk right on by and get on airplanes because they're not allowed to profile because it's politically incorrect.
Well, of course, if we were really involved with the war on terrorism, they wouldn't worry whether it was politically incorrect or not. They would have our borders sealed. They would have had them sealed on September the 12th of 2001. Obviously, they know something we don't. They're really not as, you know, worried about Islamic terrorism as they have us think. And if you look at most of the cases of these Islamic terrorists they've arrested here in the United States, almost every one of them is involved in agent provocateur, paid hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions of dollars, by our government to entrap people, impressionable Muslims, into making foolish statements to incriminate themselves. Why do you have to go out entrapping people? Why don't you really go after those real terrorists, if there really are real terrorists there?
Well, you know, there's so much that's unanswered, it's incredible. But, you know, looking at it from my perspective as a career police officer and as a career military person who worked in intelligence, I can look at this whole thing and say, you know, excuse me, but we got a serious problem right here. We have borders that we don't secure, and we've known about it for 6 years, and we've done nothing about it for 6 years. And, you know, I work for a congressman part-time here in Oklahoma, John Sullivan, and I'm his Veterans and Military Affairs Council Advisor here at the Home Office. And I've asked him, I said, you know, Congressman, I said, what is the deal? I mean, what does Bush say about the southwest border? Why doesn't he, you know, why doesn't he do something? How come we haven't, like, put the National Guard down there 5 years ago? Well, you know, we can put the military to guard our borders. I've heard people that don't know anything about what they're talking about call in on talk shows and challenge me and say, well, we can't do that because of posse comitatus.
Hold that thought right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our special guest this afternoon is Craig Roberts. And Craig is retired from the military. He was there. He retired as lieutenant colonel from the reserves, that fought in Vietnam, was a professional police officer for many years. Now he's retired. He's got lots of time. Then, well, he actually does, and he's awfully busy, but he's good enough to come on with us this afternoon. And Craig was just simply talking about this so-called war on terrorism. But, of course, we can't profile anybody who might be a Muslim. You know, we can't profile more than two people getting on any plane. So we've got to consider everybody else as a potential terrorist, but not the Muslims. They refuse steadfastly to secure our borders. And Craig was saying that he has acted, you know, as a consultant. He works part-time for one of the congressmen. And he's asked the congressman, why won't the Bush administration try to close our borders down if there is really a threat of Islamic terrorism? Really doesn't make sense. I mean, they can walk right across there. If there's really this threat, they could walk across there with all sorts of explosives or whatever they want to, or poisons to put in the drinking water. So you pick up the story. What is the excuse that's used for why the president has steadfastly refused to try to seal our borders? And right up until now, when, of course, he suddenly wants to, well, put 6,000 troops on the border, but they're not going to have any weapons, and they're really not going to do much of anything. We're not going to militarize the border. We're just going to put them down there to make the American people feel like we're really doing something to justify going ahead with an immigration bill designed to destroy this country.
Well, you know, the answer I got back from our congressman was that Bush is silent on the whole thing. He hasn't, up until just recently, ever, you know, he won't even answer. He won't talk about it. He doesn't want to go there. And it's almost like he wants the border to be wide open. We found out here just recently that that's what he did want, and I'll explain that in just a second. But before we went to the break, I said that we had a lot of people. I'm gonna do some educational work here right now for the listeners, because they run into the same problem I do. They get people say, well, we can't do that because of posse comitatus. They don't understand what posse comitatus is and what you can and you can't do. Originally, it came in after the Civil War, and to make a long story short, you could not use the United States Army to go in and enforce civilian law and arrest civilians and act as civilian law enforcement type officers. It was totally separate from the civilian authorities, and so posse comitatus made the military stay away from the civilian law enforcement sector. However, there are bridges that allow the military, both active reserve and National Guard, to go and cross those bridges and enforce law, and it happens anytime the president declares a national emergency, a state of war, or something else that where they're requested to assist because civilian law enforcement can't handle a problem, say the massive riots in some major city.
Hold on, so right there, Craig. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course Craig is talking about posse comitatus and pointing out that in case of a national emergency declared by the president, in case being requested by the states, that the military can be used, and of course using them on the border, they're not being used against American civilians. Posse comitatus was to protect American civilians from, you know, controlled by the military. We're not talking about American civilians. We're talking about people who are invading our country from South America and from other countries all over the world, including many from Muslim countries coming across the border. And you're trying to say we can't use posse comitatus, can't use troops because of posse comitatus. These are not American citizens.
Well, on top of that, you know, you got Bush up there that says we won't militarize the border, but if you walk the other direction, you find out you walk right into the Mexican army. They have militarized the border, but it's a one-way valve, and they've got their military outposts and their patrols and stuff help their illegal immigrants to cross the border, the invaders to cross the border into Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, and Southern California. They assist them, and they even hand out pamphlets on the best way to go. They also set up observation posts to watch us to find out where we're not guarding. This is the Mexican army. These are special patrols that they send out to watch across the border and find areas where they can shuttle these people through. And as you said, they have actually caught, and I heard this on a radio talk show today that was a national talk show. The guy said, you know, he was talking to Chris Simcox who was down there with his Minutemen project, and they were building a fence that was going to be a couple of miles long or something like that. And he said, you know, he said, if it wasn't just Mexicans and Central Americans and coming across, he says, if there was just one Middle Easterner that came across, he said, this whole country would be up in arms, the press would be all over this thing. And Simcox interrupted him and says, hey, there's been dozens and dozens and dozens of Middle Easterners come across. We found stuff from Iraq, Iran, Jordan, Syria, and other countries, Yemen, He said, we found notebooks, we found prayer rugs, you know, and he went on and on. I talked to a friend of mine who's on the border project down there, who's a retired Army Ranger, and he works for the government down there now. He sends me email all the time, and he said that they had gone into an area to patrol it one night, and several people ran out of an abandoned ranch house. There's a lot of ranches down there that people just walked off and left because they're terrified. They can't even stay on their own family ranches anymore. And when they entered the ranch house, there was a prayer rug on the floor. There was a knapsack in the corner, and inside the knapsack were photographs and pictures of different things that looked like they had to do with terrorist weapons, and a notebook, which they couldn't translate on the spot right then, but they passed it on, you know, for further intelligence gleaning. And they said that, you know, whoever it was ran out in great haste, and they were obviously, you know, from a Middle Eastern country. On top of that, you've got this MS-13 that's been coming across in droves, and these people are as bad as terrorists. They're murdering thugs, and they're setting up gangs everywhere.
There are about 50,000 of the MS-13 in the country. That one gang, and then there's another gang, the 18th Street gang. They got 20,000 members, and we're not doing anything about them.
Yeah, just recently we found out that Bush and Vicente Fox and some other people have been working on a project under some guidance from the Council on Foreign Relations and with some the Canadian government to open up the North American continent, so to speak, from Central America all the way up to the Arctic Circle as an American zone similar to Europe, and having a common currency known as the Amero instead of the euro. And this is all stuff that's been in the works for, you know, 2 or 3, 4 years now, and we've never heard a word about it unless you dig into some of the UN minutes and you look at some of the NAFTA stuff that had gone on after NAFTA had passed. And now we've got a situation where the highest elements of our own government are in league with the Canadian and Mexican government to open everything up into one, what they call free trade zone, which means anybody can go anywhere and do anything. However, like NAFTA, it was planned so that Mexico and Canada would have the advantages first, and Americans couldn't go the other direction until the wealth had been redistributed, so to speak.
And of course, everybody came out of the Waco meeting in March of last year, where, of course, the Prime Minister of Canada, the Vicente Fox and Bush, got together. And then 2 months later, the Council on Foreign Relations released a book called Building a North American Community, where they talk about just doing away with the borders. What they do not want is for the American people to realize that the people in government have no loyalty to America. Their loyalty is this globalist dream of taking down the borders and, you know, have a multicultural, multilingual society, but destroying the sovereignty of our nation. If the American people understood that, that would mean that the people in government are traitors, and they are. They are intentionally destroying the sovereignty of our nation. They know what they're doing. The one thing I think they fear, Craig, is the American people are going to wake up, maybe just possibly before it's too late.
Well, and they're anticipating that, and that's why July 4th, the United Nations is doing everything it can to pass an international disarmament law in which no private citizen will be allowed to have firearms. Now, this is a total end run around our Second Amendment, and if anybody signs onto that in this country, then you're gonna have a situation where they scare everybody to death first by telling you, you know, you got so many days to turn your guns in, or you're gonna be a criminal, and we will come after you, and if we find you, you're gonna go to jail for, you know, 20 years, you're gonna forfeit your land, you're gonna forfeit your bank account, blah, 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 and there's gonna be so many people just roll over and say, okay, well, I don't wanna break the law, even though it wasn't a law passed by our Congress, and that's what they're working for right now. And you can get on the NRA website and read about it. You can go on the internet and just, you know, go to Google and look under UN disarmament, small arms, or any of those keywords like that, and pull up what they're going to do. You know, they're going to try to do next month. Now, once that happens, you might as well just tell this country goodbye. The only reason America exists today is because we have an armed citizenry, and when we no longer have that, then we've lost. Now, England's gone. Australia's gone, Ireland's gone, Scotland's gone, Canada's gone. All of them are the citizens have been completely disarmed. We are the last domino, and the only reason that China hasn't invaded us yet, and they've surrounded us, and we'll talk about that in a minute, is because they fear one thing, and that's an armed population. They found that when they invaded Vietnam back around, I think it was 1978, that when you go into a country where everybody's armed, you're just going to lose a lot of people and you're not going to accomplish much. And especially if you have to go great distances to supply your people or get great distances to transport your logistics and your personnel, such as from the Orient to, you know, the United States or something like that, unless you can pre-position your supplies forward. Now, everybody in the military knows that does, you know, any type of leadership courses at all, that the easiest thing in the world to move in the military are troops. You just order the troops to get on the ship or get on the plane and they march all by themselves. But the hardest thing to move is the equipment and the logistics. It takes so much to keep troops in the field, not just with weapons, but we're talking, you know, medical supplies, beans, bullets, bandages, the whole bit. All of the stuff that one person has to have in the field, it takes about 10 people in the rear to start that flow to get to them and sustain them in the field. Unless you can pre-position your stuff. In our military, such as in the Orient and in South Central Asia, we pre-position at a place called Diego Garcia in the middle of the Indian Ocean. It's an island out there. We attack the place with supplies. And we can use civilian merchant ships or Navy vessels to go get that stuff and move it. We also pre-position in certain depot areas where we can load up airplanes or load up ships and move them, you know, pretty quickly. We have ships called roll-on, roll-off ships. And such as we use them during Desert Storm coming out of Savannah, Georgia, where you could take an entire tank battalion or division and start loading them on the ships by driving the vehicles on board, chaining them down, and off you go. It still takes time to get there, but it can be moved. If they're already in place, you know, it took us 6 months during Desert Shield to build up enough military hardware and troops and logistical support to invade a little tiny place called Kuwait. 6 months. And then the war lasted less than 100 hours. If we had stuff already over there, it would have never happened to begin with. But we could have gone in, you know, within a few days. The Chinese know this. And because of this, they started an organization, a private company called COSCO, China Ocean Shipping Company. Well, the China Ocean Shipping Company is part of the People's Liberation Army Navy, what they call PLAN. That's the Red Chinese Navy. If you look at World War II, all of the aircraft, all of the civilian aircraft transports that were in the airlines, with a stroke of a pen, became military transports in the United States. We had all of our airlines were able to transport troops, you know, change their colors on the outside and flew stuff across the Atlantic and so on. China does that with ships right now. But they actually own the ships. And these are giant freighters. They're huge. And they're container vessels. In other words, they can pack containers with anything they want, stack them up all over the decks of these ships, and then transport them to different places in the world. You can't see inside the containers. You don't know what's in them. And then they unload them and they stage them someplace. And then they can transship them from there to someplace else. One of the places that they have that's one of the biggest, is the biggest transshipment point in the world, is about 90 miles off our shore at Freeport in the Bahamas. And you can get on the internet and look up Freeport, Bahamas, and COSCO, COSCO, and another company that they have that's based out of Hong Kong is Hutchinson Whampoa. Now, Hutchinson Whampoa operates ports and facilities, and such as the Panama Canal. It's obviously a coincidence that Jimmy Carter gave away the Panama Canal illegally, and then the Panamanians turned around and hired Hutchinson Whampoa to run the ports at each end of it, which basically controls the canal. And I had a debate on a radio show one day with a guy that called in, and he said, well, the Chinese don't run the canal. They only run the port on the east end and the port on the west end. I think it's San Cristobal and Balboa. And I said, well, you know, when you run both ends of a road, you pretty much run the road. And that's just the way it is down there. Well, when you run the Panama Canal, you can offload stuff from ships in Panama and send it up the peninsula into Mexico. And after the break, let's talk about that.
I think it's very so interesting that there's been a lot of concern about people smuggling things into our ports, you know, through these containers. So our government, rather than do the work here, they're going to have it done in the Asian ports. And who have they hired to check the containers coming into America to make sure there's no nuclear weapons on them? But Hutchinson Whampoa. Oh, it ties right into the Chinese military. Maybe nothing as it appears to be. Maybe we're being lied to at every turn. Maybe the Chinese and our government are working together. They have a different agenda. Maybe because they worship a different god. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Craig Roberts. Craig, pick the story up there.
Well, we go you know, with Hutchison Whampoa, and we go with Costco, and we look at these two guys, and you've got the largest ocean shipping company in the world, and our fleet's basically non-existent. Our merchant marine's pretty much gone. In fact, if you go out into any harbors and ports, it's almost all foreign vessels that are there, and a great deal of them Chinese. A lot of them will be registered in other countries, you know, Lagos, Nigeria, and Liberia, a lot of Liberian registry stuff, a lot of your stuff registered in the Middle East and so on. But there's so much that's Chinese. And of course, the Japanese, they have a pretty good fleet, too. Most of their hauls, you know, Hondas and Nissans, where the Chinese, we don't know what they haul. They intercepted a shipment that came into Long Beach, I think it was about 8 or 9 years ago. And they opened up one of these sea lift containers, and that's what they call these big things that look like a semi-truck without wheels. They opened a sea lift container, and inside it was stacked with AK-47s, automatic weapons, RPK machine guns, grenades, explosives, and all kinds of stuff. And they started trying to chase down where did it come from, where was it going, and the excuse that the shipper had was it was going to a Los Angeles street gang, and it was being smuggled in, bought illegally, they didn't know anything about it, and you know, all this kind of nonsense. When there's no Los Angeles, I don't care if it's Crips or Bloods or anybody else, in those days, that would be carrying that type of equipment or even have connections to buy it, and if they did, they sure wouldn't buy it in a giant shipment from China. That stuff was being brought in, and it was being prepositioned someplace. And the reason we know that is because shortly after that, they found another container in San Diego in a storage area that was full of different types of weapons and stuff from China, and ammunition and so on, and it was just sitting there. It hadn't been taken out and delivered to street gangs or anything else. It was sitting there waiting for somebody to come and get it or open it up and use it. We have no idea how many of those containers have come in the country, and neither does anybody else, because customs and port authorities don't inspect but 1 in 10 containers, if that many.
I think about 2% that really inspect it, and then they keep assuring us, though, you've got nothing to worry about, we're here from the government, and we're here to help you.
Well, if you can smuggle in that stuff, you can smuggle in backpack nukes, you know. You can bring, you know, the Russians are missing or have sold so many what they call suitcase nukes, or SADMs, S-A-D-Ms, which is a subatomic demolition munition, that we don't know where all these things have gone. And they use uranium, where we use plutonium, they use uranium, which is a dirty bomb. That means if they set one of these things off in downtown Manhattan, you're not going to be able to go there for about 1,000 years. It may not take out more than 3 or 4 square blocks, but the thing about it is it'll contaminate the entire area and shut it down. They were designed to do sabotage work. They were designed to be used by Spetsnaz troops in Europe and in the United States, if war ever broke out, to blow up communication centers, airports, interstate highway intersections, various, you know, dams, bridges, things like that. Anything of military significance that would have to do with our infrastructure, they were designed to go in with a pinpoint area, knock out that one little area, and make it so we can't use it again. We had the same thing. We had backpack nukes that we carried, SADMs, that we had in Europe that we were able to, if war broke out and the Russians stormed through the Fulda Gap and made an end run and headed for the English Channel, we had troops that were ordered to be able to withdraw, and as they withdrew, to deny the enemy high-speed routes of access by knocking out bridges and dams and various infrastructure areas to make it so they couldn't move, you know, the high-speed tank and armor columns very fast.
Okay, hold that thought, Craig. We're going to have to bring our other stations back on board, but we'll be back in just a moment with Craig Roberts. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Craig was just saying that certainly there are these portable nuclear devices. The Russians had them, we had them, and there is no question that if the Chinese communists wanted to bring nuclear weapons into this country in these massive cargo containers, probably not more than 5% at the most are actually checked, and we just sort of trust them on the rest of them. Pick up a story there.
Well, you know, now that we know that the Russians had a lot of them that they can't account for anymore, and conveniently they can blame it on the fact that, the whole nation just crumbled away, the military just evaporated, there wasn't any controls on the facilities where these things were stored, and we're sorry, we can't help it, we shrug our shoulders, some of them walked away. Well, we know that's not true. They had security on that stuff, even whether they were paying the guards or not, they made sure that stuff didn't just walk away because it was too valuable. It was too valuable on the open international market. Now, the Russians supported international terrorism for over 50 years. They didn't just stop supporting international terrorism, especially terrorism that would affect us. And they supported Middle Eastern terrorists. They supported Basque separatists. They supported Italian and German terrorists. They supported a lot in Africa, all the way down to Angola. So did China. China and Russia both supported Angola, the overthrow of Rhodesia, South Africa, all the rest of that. And to think that for a minute they just stopped doing that is ridiculous. So we know that the Russians have sold tonnage quantities, entire convoy loads of munitions through the arms market in Pakistan and the different Islamic countries around Afghanistan. Peshawar, Pakistan is an international arms market bazaar where you can go buy anything you want from a grenade to a MiG jet to a tank. And there's also organizations around the world that the Russians have set up to sell anything to anybody. I mean, if you want to buy a MiG-21 today, if you've got the money, you can buy a MiG-21 today, and they'll even teach you how to fly it. You may have to go to Hungary. You may have to go to the Czech Republic. You may have to go to Romania to take delivery, or they can ship them here. I know that I saw more than a dozen of them in Phoenix, Arizona, not more than 8 years ago, still in the crates that some guy had bought. So that stuff's out there. Well, they also sell nuclear weapons. They also sell shoulder-fired SAM missiles that are for, you know, surface-to-air missiles to knock out aircraft. Now, this is a scary thought because something else has been going on at the same time. I don't know if you've heard about it or not, but there's been several hundred incidents of reported lasering of commercial airliners with green lasers. Now, that means that when a commercial airliner takes off from a major airport, it's climbing out, it's at, you know, 3,000, 4,000, 6,000 feet, something like that, then all of a sudden the cockpit sees a green laser from the ground hit them. Well, the FBI has shrugged all of these things off and said there's no worries, it's no big deal, it's pranksters with a pocket laser. Well, number one, pocket lasers aren't green. They're red. Number two, they don't go 6,000 feet up and where a pilot would notice them. A military ranging laser is green. And you can take a military ranging laser and you can just laser a target and find out how far it is from your position, the altitude it's at, and how fast it's moving. And from that, you can determine if you are in a firing position to launch a shoulder-fired missile against that airplane. Now, these incidences have gone off from the East Coast through the central United States to the West Coast all the way to Honolulu. And they've been reported over and over again to the FAA, and which in turn have been reported to the FBI, and they've never caught anybody as far as I know. And what it tells me is that several people have been going to places on the departure ends of runways of major airports, locating a position in which they can lock onto a plane with a laser, which means they can lock onto that plane with a shoulder-fired missile. If they can do that and have a means of concealment to accomplish the shoot-down and then turn around and escape afterwards and have a means to get away, then they've got the whole firing profile and evolution down pat. That's what you do. I think there are people out here, whether they're terrorists or whoever they are, that are purposely setting up in places and determining firing positions in advance to launch shoulder-fired missiles. Now, if this occurs, and we've been told over and over, something's going to happen, it's going to be something big, and it's not a matter of if, but when. And, of course, we've all thought, well, they're going to release bio or they're going to release nukes, you know. But what if they start shooting down airliners and they shoot down 6 or 8 in one day or 10 or 12 or 15 in a week? They're going to shut this country down because everybody's going to be afraid to go to an airport and fly in an airplane.
And, of course, the question is, why wouldn't our government be concerned about that? Why would we be doing everything we can to build up the Chinese communists? We're guaranteed the loans that is being utilized to build up their military, to build up their industry. And we're doing the same thing. We've done the same thing for so many years with the Russians. Why would we have financed the Russians going all the way back to 1918? The best enemies money could buy. I would like to suggest that maybe nothing is as it appears to be. We'll be right back, and I share Craig's concern. We in. This is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Craig Roberts, and we're talking really about the fact that somebody has been lasering a lot of our planes, and this information is not getting out.
And it's not only not getting out, we've got FBI personnel who should be doing everything they can to track these people down and beat the bushes and do canvases in the field to try to figure out what's going on here, shrugging their shoulders and telling us, well, it's nothing really to be worried about. It's just pranksters, you know. Well, pranksters in Omaha, Nebraska is one thing, but when you see it all over the country and all in major airports, there's no small airports here. These are major city airports. These are all big airliners. You know, these aren't little light airplanes flying around. That tells me there's a mission profile being set up. And I've been in contact with some friends at FAA, and they kind of feel the same way, but it's out of their hands and what they can do other than report it to the FBI. So, you know, what do you do? It's like the Oklahoma City bombing case. We know how many people were involved. We pretty much know who they are, but we can't get a U.S. attorney to touch the case because, you know, McVeigh and Nichols, you know, were the ones they arrested. McVeigh's dead. Nichols is in jail. Case closed. Yet, if you try to explore that case, if you try to get information from the federal government, from the FBI, such as the videotapes that show how many people got out of the Ryder truck, how many people were in front of the Murrah building, and so on, you get stonewalled because they tell you that the Freedom of Information Act exemption that they use is that it's still an open case and there are others unknown and it's still under investigation. Well, you go back and say, okay, I've got some others unknown for you. Let's go investigate these guys. And they won't touch it. They don't even want to see it. They don't want to know about it. You know, it's the three monkey syndrome.
And I think for our listeners, they should know that Craig was actually approached by the FBI and worked with him during the early phases of the investigation of Oklahoma City. But they didn't want any of his information about the foreign relationships and the ties to Islamic terrorism. They didn't want to hear about it. In fact, didn't you even ask some of the FBI agents you were working with why they didn't want to hear about it?
Oh yeah, and you know, I got assigned to work with them before I retired. I spent 6 months working on the case until I just got tired of you know, witnesses being intimidated, reports being changed, obvious suspects being ignored, people that we came up with they wouldn't even talk to or pick up, and I asked this one agent, I said, let me ask you a question. I said, I see a blueprint operation going on here conducted out of Washington, D.C. Is this the same as Dealey Plaza in November of 1963, in which the local agents who wanted to do a good job, who wanted to go after the bad guys, were sent hither and yon by J. Edgar Hoover to go out in the middle of nowhere and get reports and do interrogations on people who had absolutely nothing to do with this?
Hold that thought right there. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Craig Roberts, and we're talking about what happened in Oklahoma City and the fact that there was very obviously Islamic terrorist involvement. There was an Islamic cell. Craig actually worked on this program, worked on the Oklahoma City bombing with the FBI for about 6 months. They came up with all sorts of suspects. They knew who the other people were involved with Timothy McVeigh, and the government knew about it, and they lied to the American people, and they refused absolutely to investigate it. And Craig was just saying that it had gone to one of the FBI agents and said, look, is this whole thing a diversion? I mean, you're refusing to go after the people who are working with him in McVeigh. You're refusing to go into the Islamic terrorist involvement in the Oklahoma City bombing. And what did the fellow say to you?
Well, I basically asked you if it was just like Dealey Plaza, where these agents were sent all over the place to just basically generate paper. Bury the case in 302s, what your FBI reports. Bury the case in interview forms. Bury the case in just, you know, extraneous garbage, to where if you wanted to find out one thing, you had to weave through boxes and boxes to get to it. And he said pretty much that's the way it is. They set up two or three circles around the case. The first one was the special group that they brought in to Oklahoma City that was their anti-terrorist group. And they're the ones that pretty much took over the scene, brought in their big semi-truck, put a fence around it. You know, and I think what they were was damage control. Everything they did, they didn't do anything to help the case. What they did is they did everything to destroy the case. They, you know, they had the building torn down and bulldozed and taken off and buried in the ground. They had the whole area cleaned up. They intimidated witnesses and made witnesses change their stories and so on. And then there was an outer ring beyond that, and these were the guys who were doing the investigations, within the state of Oklahoma and Kansas, that were being sent hither and yon to, you know, talk to people and generate paper. And then the third ring were all the really good agents who lived here, who wanted to work on the case, and were pretty much told, go back to the office, we don't need you. So they had a way of controlling the entire investigation, which is exactly the same thing they did on TW-800. And for people that want to get more information on this, because we're limited on time here, if they'll get a hold of you, Doc, and get a hold of a copy of my book, The Medusa File, which you carry, it goes into the Oklahoma City bombing. It has my report in there that they wanted shredded. I published it in that book. And it has the TW-800 case. It has several other cases in there that we've talked about in the past. But the point is, TW-800. The witnesses, their testimony was changed. Even the reports were changed. The people who saw missiles, over 200 of them, were told, you didn't see missiles.
You're talking about that TW-800 that came down.
Right. TW-800 off East Mauritius, about a year after the Oklahoma City bombing case.
Yeah. And you did not see what you think you saw, because we know there were no missiles. Of course, there were missiles. That plane was shot down. But they can't tell the American people the truth.
Well, no. And, you know, the Amtrak derailment in Hyder, Arizona, I worked that case with Maricopa County. And when we finally got to the point where we pretty much knew who really derailed the train, the FBI cell that was working that case decided they didn't want to stay there anymore, and they were gone the next day and went back to Washington because they didn't want to get involved into the crew that we kind of thought did it, and it suggested that we're going to be getting information on this particular group that I go into in detail in the Medusa file. And I was working with one of the detectives there, and he said, I told him who I thought it was and why I thought they were involved, and he said, well, yeah, but how do we prove it? I says, well, you won't be able to prove it, but you can prove it to yourself. I mean, you're not going to be able to take this case to court because the whole thing's covered up under layers of federal protection. I says, what you can do, though, is go to the FBI cell and tell them that you've got an informant, you've got new information coming in, you're going to serve a search warrant on this crew, and ask them if they want to go along. Well, the next day, they were gone. And they'd been there 50 days. So that kind of shows you, you know, we call it firing a shot down range and seeing who sticks their head up. We had a similar case that came up when CNN broadcast that special they called Operation Tailwind. And that was the one where they did a special on a operation in Vietnam in which some Air Force pilots were flying A-1 Sky Raiders, and they sprayed this one area in Laos with sarin nerve gas. And then they brought in some special operations guys out of Vietnam to go in and kill what they said were American defectors. This was a studies and observation group, SOG. And they brought them in, and they were going to kill these. Now, this is according to the CNN story. Well, then the Special Forces organization got involved and said no such thing ever happened. The SOG people got involved. They said no such thing ever happened. All kinds of pressure broke down on CNN telling them, hey, this story's false, it couldn't have happened, even though they had two or three people that were on it tell them exactly what happened, and including an admiral. And they got themselves in a ringer, and they didn't know what to do, so they called a friend of mine was an investigator on the Iran-Contra affair, and he referred him to me and said, hey, if it's, you know, has to do with Vietnam and Southeast Asia, call me and see what I thought about it. And I talked to him for a little bit. I missed the story, but I read about it the next day, and I started looking at it. And I had done a lot of work on the POW-MIA situation in the past, and I wrote about that in the Medusa file. And I gave it some thought, and what we find out is anytime we catch a government spokesman lying right up front, we know there's a cover-up. It doesn't matter what it is. When they put somebody officially out there to lie to us and say, this is what happened or didn't happen, and we know for a fact that that's a lie, then we can dig deeper and we can start peeling the layers of the onion back. Well, I looked at this situation. I'd never heard of it myself, but with the testimony that they already had from the people that were eyewitnesses versus what was being said that it never happened, then I went and I found out that some of the things they said were lies. They said, we never used sarin nerve gas in Southeast Asia. I found out later, yes, we did, and yes, we had it over there. I didn't even know that myself. They said that Operation Tailwind didn't occur. Well, I found out that there was an Operation Tailwind. I didn't know what it entailed at the time, but I knew that there was an Operation Tailwind. And there was no reason for the Air Force pilots to lie about it to begin with. and so on and so forth. So then I started digging a little bit deeper, and it dawned on me that what may have happened, number one, they couldn't have been American defectors that were across the border. And the reason they couldn't be American defectors is because the North Vietnamese and the Viet Cong would never co-locate American defectors in one place. They would put them back in country and utilize them. They'd scatter them around and use them as assets. They wouldn't just, you know, keep them camped out across the border. They don't have anything to lose by losing these guys if they use them anyway, but there's no reason to leave them in the rear. What this would have had to have been, if Americans were involved, would have had to have been a POW collection point. And if it was a POW collection point, it meant that they had gathered these guys together from various areas where they'd been captured, and they would send them north on the Ho Chi Minh Trail and eventually out of country if they were of any significant value whatsoever, such as backseaters and right-seaters and some of our airplanes. They would have been taken out, and they would have been, what they called at that time, put on the train. And put on the train means sent RMB for Moscow bound. They would have been sent to China, or they would have been sent to Russia, or they would have been sent to Yugoslavia or Hungary, and they would have been interrogated for everything they knew on the equipment they operated. Now, they didn't care about pilots so much as they cared about the guys that were the backseaters and the right-seaters of the various aircraft that had all kinds of SAM suppression electronics and missile systems and guidance systems and stuff like that. They wanted to know about that. That's why they wanted those guys. That's why they left and they never came back. If this was a POW collection point, then it could have been that a decision was made that we knew we couldn't stop them, we knew we couldn't get them back, we knew we couldn't go over there with a lot of troops and surround the place, but we could possibly go in there and kill these guys before they were taken to Russia, where they would be executed eventually anyway, or they were taken to Hungary or Yugoslavia or whatever, or China. So could it have been, and this is my thought process on this at the time, could it have been that this was a POW collection point? Our guys were told they were defectors because we'd never go kill our own POWs. But if the orders came down from on high that these were bad guys and we got to get rid of them before they hurt our troops, yeah, there probably would have been some operations to deal with this. But that couldn't have happened because we wouldn't have that many defectors in one place, so it would have had to have been POWs. So I call CNN back. I talk to two of the people up there.
April Oliver, I bet. And, did you talk to April?
No, I talked to a girl named Sylvia Tamarkin.
Okay.
And she was one of the producers, and she's the one that called me originally. And she was dealing with April, and was it Mark Smith was the other guy?
Right.
And I said, look, I said, here's what I think you guys have. And I explained the whole thing to him, and I said, you'll never be able to prove it. This thing would have been so highly classified, and they will have so much, you know, horsepower behind it to keep it covered up that you'll never get to that part of it. I said, the only thing you can do is prove it to yourselves. And the way you do that is you fire a shot downrange and you see who sticks their head up. Here's how you do it. What you do is you leak it in New York, Washington, and Atlanta that you have new sources coming in, new information coming in, possible witnesses, and it appears that what you really have here, that the original story was a cover-up, that it was defectors, and the actual story was that it was POWs and that had been collected in a gathering point prior to transshipment, and they were going to be executed, sent out to Russia or someplace. Just tell them it was a POW collection point, and it was eliminated. And just sit back, don't say another word, sit back and wait and see if anybody says anything. Well, they did that. And of all the people in the world to call the head guy at CNN and say, hey, you better put your foot on this, you better stop it, and you better get rid of these people, this thing, and you better make this thing go away, guess who it was?
Henry Kissinger. Right, it
is.
I actually have a 4-tape set on Operation Tailwind. Most people really don't want to hear about it, but we have I had 2 hours with a gentleman who was there, the lieutenant at the time, with Special Forces, and then 2 hours with April Oliver. We even have the testimony, actually written testimony, of Admiral Thomas Moore, who actually admitted the whole thing occurred, and even admitted that sometimes when our pilots were down and they couldn't rescue them, they dropped poison gas on them to kill them because they didn't want them to be actually captured and debriefed. And in military times, it's a terrible thing to do, but in war, you sometimes sacrifice your own men to try to win the war. Our military leaders were trying to win the war. It was, the truth of the matter is that Henry Kissinger and the elite never wanted to win the war. That's why we financed the North Vietnamese during the whole time, by financing the Russians, who were providing the planes and the military hardware. We even built the truck plant for the Russians so that they could provide the trucks to the North Vietnamese so they could carry the supplies down the Ho Chi Minh Trail to kill our boys.
Well, if you go to my book, Killzone, which is about a sniper looks at Dealey Plaza about the Kennedy assassination, you go in there and you look into the area where we got into the financing of the Vietnam War, and we find out that the concrete that was used to build a lot of our military facilities came out of North Vietnam, out of Haiphong.
Right.
And that steel that was used at Cam Ranh Bay and some of the other places came out of Red China. So we were buying that stuff from them, and then we were turning right around and sending them stuff so they could keep the war going. It was absolutely incredible.
But the average American finds that so difficult to believe. I mean, why would we do something like that? The answer is very obvious. We wanted a long, prolonged war. It was a great diversion. And as we lost our freedom here at home, and of course they began to change America, and they took God and prayer out of our schools, and they changed our immigration laws, and they found a woman had a right to have an abortion, and they began to centralize all power in Washington, D.C., and began to accumulate the massive debt that threatens us today, our attention was diverted overseas rather than seeing we were losing our freedom at home.
Well, it not only losing it was being taken away from us by our own by people inside of our own government.
Right.
If we look and the profiteering that went on at the same time during the Vietnam War alone was absolutely incredible. You know, like you've said, quoted a lot of several times, is Eisenhower warned us against the military-industrial complex at the end of World War II. It had been built to such a juggernaut that by the time the Vietnam War arrived, they had turned it into a fine science on how they could make money on war profiteering, in the sense that if you just take one thing, if you take the M16 rifle, when I landed in Vietnam in 1965, I carried an M14 that was made by Winchester. The guy standing next to me had one that was made by Remington, and the guy standing on my other side had one that was made by Colt, and somebody else had International Harvester, and who knows all. I mean, there's Ingersoll Rand. I mean, everybody made these. The M1s of World War II, the carbines of World War II, the Thompson submachine guns were all made by subcontractors, Maytag. I mean, everybody made this stuff. And everybody got a piece of the pie. But by 1967, they did away with the M14 and McNamara's Wonder, what we call the Matty Mattel, the AR-15, which later became the M16, came into play. And it was totally inadequate, not only in combat in Vietnam, it's totally inadequate today in Iraq. And they're finding out that the 223 rounder, 5.56 millimeter, is very underpowered for what we need to do with it. But that didn't make any difference to these people, because what they did is they got the contract, instead of Armalite, who made it as the AR-10 in .308 caliber, they changed it to .223, and they licensed it to Colt Firearms. Well, Colt Firearms, one of the people who had a controlling interest at one time in Colt Firearms was McNamara. And so all of the weapons that were made for the American military, the rifles, the M16s, were made by one manufacturer from 1967 on. Then we have the Bell helicopter. If you look at Bell helicopter alone, they made the majority of helicopters in Vietnam. There were a few Hughes 500s over there, known as the LH-6s, that the Hughes Helicopter Company made. There were scout ships, known as Loaches. There were some Boeing aircraft over there, and some Sikorskis. But by and large, all your Hueys, all your Cobra gunships, and all your OH-58s were made by one company, and that was Bell Helicopter Textron out of Dallas-Fort Worth. Interestingly enough, the guy that ran Bell Helicopter Textron at the time was former SS General Walter Dornberger. He was brought over here, and instead of standing war crimes for the V-1 and V-2 rocket projects, he was instead rescued during Operation Paperclip, brought over here, and to run our rocket program with Wernher von Braun and all the rest of the German scientists that we brought over here under Paperclip. And as his reward, he was given the chairman of Bell Helicopter Textron, at which time Lady Bird Johnson owned a controlling interest, while Lyndon Baines Johnson served in the White House and bought Bell helicopters to send to Vietnam. So, I mean, this stuff went over and over. So what I did when I was working on my book, Killzone, I wrote the Securities Exchange Commission, and I asked them some simple questions. I said, from the years of 1963 until 1973, I would like to know who owned the majority shares and controlling interest of Bell Helicopter, Colt Firearms, Chrysler, Ford, and, you know, several other companies that made military equipment that we used during the Vietnam War. I think I had a dozen of them. Well, it took several weeks, and I finally got, I kept getting letters back that said, well, we've looked at this, and are you still interested in knowing this stuff? I'd say yes, and I'd fill out these forms, and I'd send them back in. I was being stalled. Finally, I got a phone call from this guy, and he said, those records are over in the archives, and we're going to have to send somebody over there to try to find those records. It wasn't like I was asking who made bubblegum in Florida. This is big, major stuff. This is from a government that has records of how to shoe a mule still on file for the Army PAC Corps, and yet we couldn't get who owned the controlling interest of Chrysler or Colt Firearms. Finally, I got a lady, and she went and looked, and she called me up, and she said, this is very strange. All those records have been shredded under a new act called the Reduction in Records Act.
Well, because we might even say cover-up act, because the last thing they want is for the American people to really understand how this whole thing fits together. I mean, we helped the enemy during the whole Vietnam War, and a small clique here in America made a tremendous, tremendous profit out of the blood of our servicemen. Well, Craig, we've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, you know, we didn't get a chance to get into some of the stuff, but we never do.
Well, one of these days we'll have to get some for 2 hours, but right now, right?
Well, we get on a roll. Who knows where it goes when you and I are there. But the bottom line is, what we have now is we've got a country that's wide open. No one's home watching the chickens. Our military's been worn out. It's running on fumes now. We're not guarding any of our borders. And meanwhile, our senior politicians are making deals with other countries to open up an entire region here as an entire new regional country. There's not going to be any more nation states as such, but instead we'll have trade zones. All of this stuff's going on around us, and yet we're seeing news of inconsequential stuff that's mind candy just to keep us busy on other things. And if it wasn't for so many people noticing so many Hispanics all over the country that are illegals coming in, and so much drug traffic coming in, screaming and yelling locally, it's a grassroots revolt inside the American Republic as we know it right now that's finally making the media and finally making the government stand up and start paying attention. But all they're doing now is they're giving us band-aids. They're saying, well, we're going to put some troops here and we're going to do that, but we're not going to arm them, we're not going to militarize, we're not going to do this, that, and the other. And they say absolutely nothing about the Chinese presence in Mexico, Freeport, the Bahamas, Canada, and many other places around us. It's a frightening thought.
And they really are. They're moving into Mexico, they're moving into Canada, and they're certainly surrounding the United States. And why then is the United States funding communist China? We recently guaranteed something like $8 billion in loans to build 5 new nuclear plants over in China. Why would we build nuclear plants in China when we can't build them here in the United States? Or maybe nothing as it appears to be.
Well, it isn't, because the United States has already been written off by the globalists, and their plan of action is eventually there will be no more United States. We'll just be one little nation state in the entire New World Order global politic.
Amen to that. And, of course, what they really intend to do is destroy the border between the United States and Canada to unite the three countries in North America and then, of course, Central America and then the whole world. It's a New World Order, a New World Religion. Craig Roberts, thanks so much for being with us. And do you have a website or anything you'd like to get out?
Let's send everybody over to riflewarrior.com. Rifle isn't gun, warrior isn't soldier, all one word, riflewarrior.com. I've got several articles posted there now. I've got, of course, all my other books that you don't carry are there, and all kinds of neat stuff to look at. You can just go explore until your heart's content.
All right, God bless, and thanks so very much, Craig. It's always a pleasure having you with us here at Radio Liberty.
Bye-bye, Doc.
Bye-bye. All right, fine. Well, it was Craig Roberts, and we'll tell you in a moment all the things that we carry that Craig has produced here for us. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I hope you enjoyed my interview with Craig Roberts. I always do. If you haven't read his book, Medusa File, it's one of the finest books we have. Going into the background of so many of the things we've talked about, we carry Craig's book, Medusa File. We carry his book, A Sniper Looks at Dealey Plaza. It goes into what really happened when they killed President... It's called Killzone, actually, A Sniper Looks at Dealey Plaza. And then, of course, we carry a 4-tape set on Operation Paperclip. We have a four-tape set on Operation Tailwind. If you want to know who controls the media in America, why we have the new media monopoly, we carry a book written by one of Craig's good friends called Doorway to Hell. It is a story of Somalia. That's Doorway to Hell, the story of Somalia. And then, of course, if you have not gotten our four-tape set on Vietnam, or on the men we left behind, or on One Man Came Back, we have something we call the Vietnam Special that has all sorts of information on Vietnam, the information you're not going to get elsewhere. But Vietnam was not a war that was fought to defeat communism. The war was a great diversion as they took away our freedom home. Here at home, and while we were watching the flag-draped coffins come back and the weeping widows, people did not understand that everything was being done to change America forever. And that's what it's really all about. In fact, in some respects, that's exactly what's happening in Iraq. We're not trying to defeat the enemy. If we were, we would not have dissolved the Iraqi army and police force and civil service and created the chaos there and then blocked efforts to rebuild the Iraqi army. We would not, of course, set up a police force that's full of people who actually have murder teams and they're going out and killing people and they're torturing people. These are the police teams that we've established. We've got, probably close to 50 to 100 thousand, mercenaries over there, guards that are not in our military, and heaven only knows what they're doing. What you need to do is get the things we have here to understand the history of the past. You need the four-tape set Operation Paperclip about how we brought the Nazi scientists over here. We have a great book on that subject, Operation Paperclip and the Mind Control Games, called Operation Bluebird. We have the Operation Tailwind. Nobody else has this. Interviews with April Oliver and the people who were actually there at Operation Tailwind. And then, of course, the book Killzone, the book The Medusa File, the book Doorway to Hell. And then we hope that many of you will give serious consideration to going to our website at www.radioliberty.com, where you can listen to our programs 5 hours every day on the Internet, American Freedom Net, AmericanNewsNet.com, GCNLive.com, RadioLiberty.com, RBN, that's Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN.com. We have the opportunity to get the word out across America. We quite frankly need your help to be able to continue doing it. So if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, if you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, why, just give us a call at that same number, 1-800-544-8927, and we'll introduce you. Well, our latest newsletter deals with the angel that rides in the whirlwind and directs this storm. Actually, President Bush referred to that twice in his first inaugural speech, and you can get that inaugural speech if you go up on the Internet at whitehouse.gov and get the first inaugural speech. And ask yourself, why was President Bush talking about an angel that rides in the whirlwind and directs this storm? Why did he refer to it not once but twice and concluded his first inaugural address? Who is the angel and what's the whirlwind, and what's the storm? If you'd like my April newsletter, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. You certainly want to get our pamphlets on the occult hierarchy. There really is an occult hierarchy. There is another dimension. We're involved in the spiritual battle behind everything going on, a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. And so until tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you.
KFER FM 89.9.